Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased to be joined this afternoon by Isota, who is here with us to talk about her experience of participating in the very first offering of the Stop, Drop, and Text program. Welcome.
Hello, hi.
How are you?
Great.
Will you tell me, am I pronouncing your name properly?
Yeah, you're saying it perfectly. Isota. The way you're telling it is perfect.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. So I wondered, you know, a lot of folks probably listening to the show may not even be familiar with the Stop, Drop, and Text program. So I wondered if first you might tell us just about the program itself and kind of how it works from having just finished participating in it.
Yes, of course. So you are supposed to text a facilitator 3 times per day. The cool thing is that you receive no warning whatsoever. You just, the day it starts, well, you receive the number, and you just have to start texting 3 times a day, one in the morning, one in the middle of the day, and one at the end of the day. And you're supposed to text about the process that's happening in the moment that you are texting, no? And the amazing thing is that the facilitator text you back, you know, 3 times per day. So whatever you're seeing, whatever you're working on process-wise, you always have somebody helping you, let's say, about it.
Yeah.
And you have to limit it to 50 words, which is great. So you really have to really think about what the process that's going on is. So you really have to, you know, like for the email class, you really have to be concise.
Yeah.
And tell what's going on, you know.
You know, I love that aspect of it because you could have a ton going on. You know, maybe you have a big story, maybe conditioning's got you in the middle of some big thing you're believing. And without that 50-word limit, we could be tempted to tell the whole story, right? And then this and that happened. But that 50-word limit really requires us to stop. See,
exactly.
Process, right?
And another thing that came out a lot for me is that even if I thought I had 30 million processes going on at the same time, the moment I had to narrow it down to 50 words, it ended up it was all the same process, you know, as it always does, you know.
I love it. Yeah. Yes, just that very invitation to, oh, it's, you know, about the middle of the day, time to send my second text. Let me stop, look, and to realize, wait, all that supposed chaos, all those stories that are going on, all the millions of things, are actually just the same process.
This is what came up. And another cool thing that I liked about it is that, on the good days, but many times, life, if you listen, I have the impression that life reminds you to send the text, you know? Like, if you're, after you get used to it, you know?
Yeah.
So you are in the middle of 30 billion process, you're super confused, you don't know how to handle your day, and life tells you, I mean, to me it happened, there is a way out of this chaos. You can stop, drop, and text, you know?
I love it. Oh, boy, even using the very name of the program, that's
yeah, exactly.
You can stop, drop, and text.
Exactly.
Yeah.
While on the other end, there is the negative aspect of it, which is, of course, we have to be fighters and don't fall for it, that sometimes one forgets, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so it's super important not to beat oneself up because conditioning, of course, is super happy when you forget, you know?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. So happy when you forget. And to just go, oh, I forgot. Okay, great. Well,
okay, exactly, because it's typical, especially for me, it happened with the last message of the day because you have to send it between 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. your time, you know?
Right.
And, of course, it's very classical to remember it at 7:01, you know? So.
Exactly. And then I just love that to then go, okay, I missed that one. We'll pick it up tomorrow. And
exactly.
Okay, what we have is our recording and listening practice. So, well, I still have the mentor, right?
Exactly. And another super cool aspect, I think, I don't know, for me, but I think most of the people, is that on many times, you know, when you send a message about the process, you realize that you should really record and listen about it, you know? Because, you know, once you are texting, you really say, wow, this is something I should record and listen about, you know? So, for example, sometimes I started adding RL at the end of the text, like we do for the email class, you know? And then, of course, I felt, wow, I cannot be lying to my facilitator. So after texting, I really made myself RL, you know, because what's the point otherwise?
Exactly. If you're going to put RL there, you got RL.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's such a great idea to add RL there. Yeah, that's really great. You know, it's like the graduate level stop, drop, and text. So there's the process of stopping and texting and really just getting to practice in the middle of your day, but then taking it to the whole other level of recording what you wrote, what the response was the facilitator, and then everything you see about that.
Exactly, exactly. And another trick that conditioning did was doing on some days was telling me, oh, she or he, I don't know, but the facilitator is just going to answer to you to record and listen and ask the mentor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it will, the facilitator will have nothing new to say.
Right.
While the answers were always super interesting, you know? Because it's typical, not that when you say when you see a process very clearly,
yeah.
Conditioning says, what else can the facilitator tell you? You already saw the process. Right. While it was not like that, you know?
Yeah, that the it sounds like the responses really surprised you, that there was something.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, and it reminds me so much of Sangha that we're in the middle of a retreat right now, and we were just talking about this in one of our group discussions, the power of Sangha where someone sees something. So in this case, you text it in, and I project for the facilitator. That's fabulous for their practice because they stop and read what you had just seen. And then they see something about that, and they text back, and then you get to see something about that. And it's just this endless process of, you know, tag-teaming on insights.
Yeah, and this is another super, between quotes, difficult aspect, because conditioning will just be telling me, at least, but I guess most people, oh, you're just bothering this person. You're taking away their time, no? And so it's so nice not to think that maybe this other person is enriched by it too, you know?
Oh, you know.
And at a certain point, through halfway throughout the program, a mail came in saying, telling people to text, you know, because I guess somebody wasn't texting much. And so I was reading it, and that was when it came up that, yes, for them, it's useful too, no?
Uh-huh.
Because really, I felt, oh my God, I'm so blessed, I'm so fortunate, but I thought this person was just doing me a huge favor, you know?
Yeah, well, I can guarantee you it is a classic win-win for sure. Because facilitators, of course, are having the exact same experience. They're getting to stop, drop, and text 3 times a day. So it's
how fabulous.
It is fabulous. It's so, and one of the things, there are 2 things that I think are amazing about it. People have talked about how sort of there's an interesting intimacy to it in that, I mean, as you say, it's literally like you send a text and then you get a response right to your very phone, and yet it's completely anonymous. So the you never know who you're texting to, the facilitator, and the facilitator doesn't know who you are. It's just literally some beautiful person in the Sangha texting to some other beautiful person in the Sangha.
Yes, this is fabulous too, exactly, because not knowing, you know, every answer comes as a surprise, no? It's not like you kind of know the person, you kind of imagine what they would say, you know?
Yeah.
It's just perfect and fabulous, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's intimate in a way, but it's completely not personal, just exactly.
Exactly, exactly, uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, another thing that came up is that the other person, since it's not personal, the other person has no idea about your life. So you really have to synthesize the process in a general way.
Yeah.
And sometimes doing it, you think, oh, wow, my life is interesting. Or you think, you know, the fact that you have to kind of present what's going on with you to somebody else who doesn't know it makes you see your life in a more interesting way, you know?
Yes, I do know. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the other point that I would underline is you live far away. And how amazing how texting and all of these technologies make it completely irrelevant where one lives.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Yep. So I just think that's such a huge gift of where we are in the world right now with technology. And
that's fabulous. And also, I want to advertise it for other people living outside of the States, because I just wrote in saying, I live abroad. Could the facilitator be able to text me? And I was so surprised that it was actually possible. And maybe some other people living elsewhere didn't give it a try. And so it's so great for everyone to know that, you know, it can be, that the facilitator can text abroad.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Well, Isota, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Is there anything else you wanted to say before we end?
Yes, super quick. Since I became a stop, drop, and text junkie, and now that the program ended, I'm desperate. I'm experimenting with texting the mentor. Because I don't know how it works in the States, but here people get a lot of free SMS in their phone.
Yep.
So it actually costs nothing to text.
Yep.
And sometimes you're in the middle of a meeting and you cannot go out and record and listen, you know?
Yep.
So I'm doing this experiment to text the mentor until the program starts again, of course.
I love
and
it.
So
well,
I will report on it.
Yes, please, please do. That is fabulous. I just had this picture of you in a meeting just saying, oh, excuse me one sec, I just need to answer this.
Yeah, exactly. It's so great. And nobody has a clue because people are playing with their phone all the time, you know?
Yeah. And for you, it's just a little centering break.
Yeah, and it's so great because I pretend that it's really the stop, drop, and text. So I really describe the process. You know, I don't say, oh, my boss is boring. I just write, you know, having difficulty focusing, conditioning, doesn't want to listen. You know, it's a process, you know.
Sure. And then you get to do an amazing disidentification exercise, which is then pretending this is not the text from you. This is a text from this person who's texting you, and you get to really stop and look and see what would you respond to her.
Exactly, but this comes super easy because the mentor just reply, just record and listen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you a million for being on with us this afternoon, and I know we'll be hearing from you more soon.
Thank you so much. A big hug and gassho to everyone. And thank you to my facilitator and to all the facilitators.
Yeah, big gassho to you as well. Good night, Isota.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Isota. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. I'll tell you what. I'm grinning so hard, my face hurts. That was one of the most fabulous conversations I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I got so many tips. That last one, that is a game changer. You know, just send the mentor a text. Oh, I love it. How are you?
I'm great. I had the same experience you had. I'm just grinning from ear to ear and just loving the whole conversation and the message and the accent to boot. So it was just great.
Yes, all that and charming on top of it. So, yeah, it was great. I mean, anybody who doesn't sign up for that program after that recommendation, I mean, she was just so perfectly clear about the program and why we do it and what it's designed to accomplish and how well it accomplishes that. It was really, really good. And, of course, the fact that you can live anywhere in the world and participate in these programs. So again, I think she made a really good point. Probably an awful lot of people don't realize that everything we do off of the property can be done anywhere. Reflective listening buddies, you can have a coach, you can do stop, drop, and text, you can practice anywhere. Just a ton of those kinds of reminders that will go anywhere. So that was marvelous.
It was marvelous.
Thanks to both of them. Yeah.
Yes. And I was a participant in the program as well, and it was fabulous. It was great.
Oh, good. Good. Well, I have actually been doing this very project with the person who originally came up with the idea. I think is the way it went, who laid the whole thing out for us. And, I mean, we've been doing this now for, I don't know if we're into years, certainly months and months and months and months. And I'm right there with that point that was being made that I don't know what the other person gets out of it, actually. I can only hope they enjoy it. But I get so much out of it for that, for all of those very reasons. You know, I'm just going along doing whatever I'm doing. I get a text and, oh, and it's not just a, you know, your ordinary text. It's somebody's talking about practice and process. And I get to stop and I get to see what's going on with me and respond to what, you know, it's a wonderful thing. And I can't remember where I was talking about this, but I think it was on Open Air, maybe last week or whenever, about having the things all day long. You know,
uh-huh.
that we get this idea that, okay, I'll meditate in the morning, and then I can happily be unconscious for the rest of the day. But when we have these things coming in all day long, bringing us to conscious awareness, it just turns on the afterburners of practice.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Because it's so, as you said, it so interrupts whatever's going on that it requires me to come back here, put my practice hat on if it's not on already, and think about, oh, yeah, process, the moment, what's going on.
Yeah, instead of what can happen to it, you know, we just get lost out there, and God knows when the next time is going to happen. Usually, of course, we come to with, you know, karmic conditioning or self-hate yelling at us about something, or when we feel so bad that, and so this is a, you know, interrupt your day to feel good as often as possible.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's fun.
I love that line that Isota used, there's a way out of this chaos.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. It's good. So, do you have some announcements for us?
I do. We have one spot left in our next There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat. That's July 5th through 12th. And this retreat usually sells out. So email.
Well, I'll tell you, it did. We set records on cancellations for this retreat. There were 8 or 9 people who signed up for it and had canceled for one reason or another.
Oh, wow.
So this is almost unheard of at this point and still have a spot open. So hopefully it's somebody who can either grab a plane ticket or is close enough that they can dash up.
Yes. And while you're dashing out, send an email to information@livingcompassion.org to let them know you're coming.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we can fix the spot for you.
Yes. And folks can join you, Sherry, for a one-day workshop in Seattle on July 20th. People are going to learn how to have it all through
mm-hmm.
exercises and group processing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, beginning July 1st, Open Air will switch to a new online platform. There'll be new ways
excited
to call
about
in.
That.
Yes. There'll be new ways to call in and listen, and look for more announcements in the coming weeks about how to participate and how this is going to unfold.
Right.
And finally, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information on these and all our events.
Mm-hmm. Come to North Carolina.
Yes, in August, I think it is.
Yep.
But there's nothing
North Carolina in August. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Bethlehem, Pennsylvania in the 1st of September. Oh,
great.
So much. So many
so
great
much.
Places, so much fun.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope another stop, drop, and text coming soon. I
think there is. I don't know that far. Yeah, I'm sure there is. There has to be. No.
Great.
We'll make it happen.
Good.
Good.
Our call-in number today is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406, and then you'd enter your PIN followed by pound. And we're going to focus on one topic in about 5 minutes, if we can today.
If we can.
If we can. Ever inspiring.
Yeah, that's our aspiration. All right, thanks, Michael.
Sure. Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Laura.
Hey, Laura.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I also very much found the Stop, Drop, and Text program valuable.
Oh, good. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'm hoping that I'm hoping we weren't wrong and that there is another one being lined up.
And I really liked the part of it because the encouragement to the text was not only to look at what the process was, but that the third part of it was to look at kind of what was the next step. So I felt like sometimes I didn't even need the facilitator to write back because I had already had to check in with the mentor and say, okay, where am I?
Aha.
You know, what's the...
And so often that's the case, isn't it? It, as Michael said, you know, it's just getting us stopped, right?
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we stop and check in, and the guidance is there, the wisdom is there. It's just that karmic conditioning gets us on such a roll and lost in a conversation, and we forget that that wisdom and guidance is available to us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, what's going on in you in your life and practice these days?
Lots of things. The one thing that I've been looking at recently is, and it came up a lot during the email class about the body, was sort of some old karma about feeling like I need to be really thin and. Yeah, and just kind of looking at that again.
Uh-huh. Now, I'm going to focus just briefly on the again. So it sounds like this is something that cycles around regularly or periodically?
Yeah, it was something that I struggled with in college. And then, but it's, you know, I feel like it, whenever condition gets a chance, it'll try to, you know, throw it back in there.
Uh-huh, drag that one out. And
yep.
do you have a... any kind of feeling at all that it's when things are going well, or is it when you're particularly vulnerable, or I mean, is there, do you have a sense of of the pattern of it?
Yeah, I haven't really looked at that before, but I do, I mean, I remember thinking when I was, you know, feeling this and feeling like, wow, this feels really strong, and just it was like, well, of course, here I am forging this relationship with my body, and you know, of course, conditioning has to try to do something to.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There. We have it. Huh. That would fit perfectly. So yes, your focus is on caring for your body, appreciating it, bringing compassion and loving kindness to your body. So. So conditioning's angle would be you really need to lose weight.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing that I was seeing was that as I've done some recording and listening about it, I can see that because the sort of the content level is that I've gained weight recently. And so that's just, you know, conditioning wants to talk all about that. But then when I really... you know, when I was recording and listening about it, it's kind of like the mentor was reminding me, like, no, actually, like, we have evidence that this might actually be better for the body. And, like, I've noticed that since I've gained a little weight, like, I have fewer headaches and things like that. And but conditioning just wants to not look at that.
Oh, no. There's no suffering in maybe this is better for you. Maybe you'll be healthier and feel better. No, we don't want to have those conversations. Yeah. So it's helpful, isn't it? It's helpful to have those kinds of connections, right? So what is it that set this off? Oh, well, I'm being kinder. So that's, you know, it's going to scan the horizon and find the upsetting thing, a place where I am vulnerable because, you know, most females, that one works really well. You know, our conditioning is not nearly as much about taking care of the body as in being concerned about how the body looks. So So that would be a perfect one to go after you with. And you get to see it for what it is, and you're, then you're left in a position to make a conscious choice for yourself about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that kind of seeing it again, kind of what now that I'm in practice and all that, it makes me realize the meanings that conditioning attaches to how I look. That how I look means belonging, it means, you know, relationship, it means all of those things.
Yes.
According to conditioning.
Well, right, according to conditioning, and it's pretty much all the proof we need that we are in a deeply egocentrically, karmically conditioned society. Because goodness knows there is a lot of money spent attempting to convince primarily women, but, you know, men have their own things with that. But that, yes, if you look a certain way, you get all of those things. And, you know, we can see that it's true in a lot of cases. You know, you very, very rarely see famous women who are overweight and unattractive.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't happen. So the brainwashing about that is enormous. And then we're going to be people who say, you know, I'm not as concerned about that as I am that this person is healthy and happy and comfortable and at ease and feels like she belongs to herself and belongs in her own body and is happy to be there. That's what we're concerned about. So we just have to let a whole lot of conventional wisdom, little quote marks in the sky, go in order to put our focus where we want our focus to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the thing that you said about belonging to myself really resonates, because it feels like this is sort of the opposite of that, that once I'm in that orientation, then all of a sudden I don't belong to my body, I don't belong, you know, it's just an experience of separation.
Right, which is what karmic conditioning does, right? It is that the first place of separation is separate from ourselves, from our bodies, from authentic nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and once that separation happens and we identify with karmic conditioning, then we're separate from everything. Then it really is a survival.
And the other thing that was dropping in was that I'm remembering that in college, one of the things that made a big difference for me was I was, the summer when I kind of finally came out of it, I was babysitting some young girls and seeing them start to struggle with this, seeing them start to get brainwashed with it, that was kind of what gave me the willingness to say, no, I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to.
Right. Yeah. Don't want to pass this along. Don't want to do it to myself. Don't want to participate in doing it to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that. It's always a good reminder for all of us, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. All right.
All right. Thank you, Laura.
Thank
you so much. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Michael Hart.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
Good. Be awful if we didn't.
Yes, it would. Next caller.
Be a long hour.
You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Catherine from St. Louis.
Well, hello, Catherine.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I want to ask you a question about, I have some karma that comes around every now and then. It sort of circles around. And there's a story, and I seem to always believe it, at least at first.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that life is passing me by. I have forgotten to live, and it's too late.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of a, you never followed your bliss, sort of a, you know, and it's too late now. And a couple of things have happened recently, and this story came up. And I recorded and listened, And I'm wondering if, and I've recorded and listened a lot about it, actually, and I'm wondering if the fact that I am an Enneatype 4, and, you know, something is missing
mm-hmm.
for Enneatype 4s, I'm wondering if
mm-hmm.
that's got something to do with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That why
I bet you're onto something.
Yeah.
Because that's an orientation that you are kind of primed to believe.
Yes.
And the Enneatype is always going to be on the lookout for what the content is. So I'm sure I'm missing something. Now, what is it? And karmic conditioning is just right there to plug in whatever. It seems like now would be a good time for her to buy into that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
So it could, and a lot of things could trigger it. You know, a birthday can trigger it. A season can trigger it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you read an article about somebody who does something that you thought about doing when you were 22. And then, you know, so anything can set it off, can remind it that, well, that would be a good one to throw in.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, I think you're absolutely correct about that.
Mhm. Mhm. It.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
What is your bliss that you haven't followed?
Well, I have no idea. And except, I recorded a lesson today, and the mentor said, "You absolutely are following your bliss. The practice is your bliss."
I was wondering about that myself.
Yeah. I mean, I followed my bliss for over 18 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and
thank
goodness for
true.
Practice recorders and mentors, huh? Because
yeah,
otherwise, that is a fast trip to hell, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you haven't followed your bliss. Well, what is your bliss? Well, I don't know. I've never known what my bliss. Well, my God. I mean, where do you start being a loser? When did you know, and then in that practice moment, you get to realize that's not true. I've been following my bliss for nigh on to 2 decades now.
Yeah, yeah, and I was actually before. I mean, you know, there was a spiritual quest before that. I just didn't know about the practice.
Right.
Before then, so
You know, following our bliss. I mean, most of us could probably tell horror stories about getting to the point where we thought, oh, okay, this is it. This is it. I'm gonna pursue mm-hmm. this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we were on the path all the time. We just may not even have known we were on the path.
Mm-hmm.
So we've always been following our bliss in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think this is kind of something this, you know, you aren't doing life right and you're missing it and all that. This is something that comes around, and I often find what I do, I have recorded and listened about it, but what I will do is try to distract myself from it because it feels so painful. And I've kind of decided this time I'm not going to do that.
Good for you. I'll tell you what. I got to tell you this thing, okay, because I'm very excited about this. I was listening to a recording today that said exactly that. Exactly that. That what we do is learn to distract ourselves so that we won't feel the pain. And then the distraction gets hold of us from being present to the joy of life.
Hmm. I'm sorry that I something might be going on with my phone, but I heard there was a blip in there. Could you say that again, Sherry? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Just that what conditioning does to us is talk us into a distraction to try to escape the pain. So if
mm-hmm.
you do this distraction, you won't feel that awful pain. And then once we believe that, once we buy that story, all it has to do is just wave a little threat of pain in front of us,
mm-hmm.
and we dive to whatever it tells us to do to escape it. And what we're actually escaping, though we don't know it, is the joy of being present in life.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So I just kind of made up my mind. I'm just going to be present. Stay
yes.
present, and it's kind of a journey. It feels like another part of the journey here.
Yes, and the thing about it is, with what you putting that together with what we were just talking about. So here's this Enneatype 4. Let's just say that, and she hears these terrible things said to her from karmic conditioning, and they make her feel really bad. And instead of going along with her trying to escape from that process, you have the opportunity to stay with her, to be the conscious, compassionate awareness that helps her see through all of it, helps her see through all of it, and helps her to feel embraced and welcomed and that she belongs and is cared for and that she's happy to be here present in life.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're practicing, right? To
mm-hmm.
be able to be that for any and everything that suffers.
Yes. Mm.
So if that woman is left on her own, she's going to go for the distraction because she doesn't know anything else to do. But you do. You know something else for her.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's an exciting, very loving, and I would say fulfilling part of the adventure, part of the journey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You get to take somebody by the hand and help them along through the awarenesses that have transformed your life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. It's a wonderful thing. You know, a lot of people get confused. Almost every conditioned human being on the planet is a child and wants to be a child. Wants to throw fits and temper tantrums and blame everybody and cry and whine and be a victim and not take any responsibility. It's extremely popular in the conditioned world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what we do in awareness practice is realize that we no longer want to live life as a child. We want to move into the group who is assisting in ending the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of it's graduating from an egocentric child to a conscious, compassionate grown-up who can assist.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
mm-hmm.
powerful.
Mm-hmm. And very exciting.
It's very exciting. It is very exciting. And because we're empowered. You know, it's not exciting to sit around and whine that that the world is being mean to you. That is not an exciting way to live. It's,
mm-hmm.
it fulfills the ego, but it doesn't do much for the heart. So
mm-hmm.
this is heartful.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you,
Catherine.
Okay,
well, thank you. Uh-huh.
Good night.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air. That was a powerful conversation, Sherry.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, sometimes it's just good for us to remember exactly why we do this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
And that's, go ahead, say that again.
Ending suffering.
Ending suffering and being of assistance.
Yes.
You know, being of assistance, the first person we get to assist out of suffering is the person we call myself.
Yeah.
Right? So we get to step out, disidentify, move back from that person in order to see them clearly and know how we can be of assistance. And as we do that process, we learn how to bring conscious, compassionate awareness to the moment and to someone who's suffering. And then once we know how to do that, we get to, again, we get to move over into that other club where we're no longer looking at life in terms of what have you done for me lately, but instead operate in life from a place of gratitude and a desire to give back because we have actually been given so much.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a blessing.
It is a blessing. It's And that's funny because we're grateful, and then we're grateful that we're grateful,
yeah.
Right? Because every layer of gratitude is another layer of freedom.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a wonderful circle.
Yeah.
Sherry, we're going to break and hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back to talk to more callers.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have more callers, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Connie in Ohio.
Well, hello, Connie. How are you?
Hi there. I'm grinning from ear to ear now from that last call. That was wonderful.
Oh, good.
Yeah, this is only my second time calling, and that was perfect. I feel like I could hang up because you just talked to me. So,
should you give us just a couple of details, though, before you hang up?
Well, you know, it's the NEF4, and it's the missing out on things, but I really loved how you ended that up with the idea of almost nobody wants to grow up, and, of course, neither do I. However, with a little bit of NEF2, I love the idea of assisting and helping,
mm-hmm.
obviously, with the ending suffering. And I just, how you put that was great. So I'm grinning on that one.
Good.
I'm
glad.
Wonderful.
I'm glad.
That you're going to come to My Fair State. So I can.
That's right. I think we're actually going to be there a couple of times, right? I think Jen, say it again.
I one that I know of in Dayton, so I'm real excited. So
I don't know where the other one is, but I think Jen is going to be somewhere in Ohio too. So keep an eye peeled for that. But yeah, I get to see you in Dayton.
Yay!
Yeah. Now here are the rules, Connie. You have to come up to me and tell me who you are.
I definitely will.
Yeah, because we don't do the little name tags. So it's easy for people to sneak in and out, and then I never know that I actually got to meet you because
I
didn't
definitely.
Actually get to meet you. So
I'm excited. Right. It'll be great. Wow.
All right.
Good. Wow.
Well, is there anything else?
What I was going to talk about, I got a little distracted with that last call. That was very neat. But one of the things, I just started seeing, you know, it's from a couple weeks ago. Justin was doing the show, and at the
mm-hmm.
end of the show, he said something, which was basically, are you sure it's not just going to a next level? And it was talking about, you know, when you're going through the really hard dark night of the soul time and everything with a lot of stuff going on, content doesn't really matter. And since I've been in this practice, which is short time compared to some people, probably three and a half years. I come from a years and years lifetime of spiritual practice, but I've never really thought about levels or getting to another level with this particular practice, because everything seems so all one and all encompassing. And so that was, I guess, something that I had a question about. And what I ended up doing, because I couldn't ask the question right away of you, I thought about calling, which I did, so this is great. But I decided to just suppose that, what if that was possible? And I thought, you know, I'll just be open to that concept. Well, what if that's possible? What if it isn't just some dark night that's going to last forever, and there is going to be light at the end of the tunnel or whatever? And then I read your good news update about turning practice upside down.
Uh-huh.
And instead of practicing, you know, an hour a day, you do the 20, you know, do the 23 hours or whatever. And I loved how it was something that just reminded me. So I've been thinking about that a lot. So anytime lately in the last few days, EKC comes in with something, I just think, I'm thinking about, oh, why don't I just turn that upside down? And what I'm doing is then just supposing that this is just, you know, some step up, and I just don't know what it is yet. So
that is so perfect. And I love that phrasing. I love that phrasing. This is a step up, and I just don't know it yet. Because that is how I remember, I don't know who talked about this, but somewhere. Somebody used the phrase, we must learn to live historically. And I love that, because it perfectly captures for me what practice is like. I'm always in some place, and I don't know where it is or how it relates to anything else.
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Right,
so,
on the timeline of life.
Pardon me?
On the timeline of life, which is pretty much this here now all the time, but to put it in any perspective, on that timeline, we don't know what that is.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
And so oftentimes we're going along, and suddenly there's a breakthrough. There's an insight. And all of these pieces fall into place, and we can see how they relate to one another. But we couldn't see it before. And for me anyway, I kind of look back, and I realize I was living that piece, and that piece, and that piece, and that piece, and I had no idea they related to one another until that moment of insight. And I can
right.
see it. Yeah. Yeah. So what to me, what you're pointing at with this, what you've put together from what Justin said, is the level at which we can relax into and trust life. That whether we know it or not, what's going on for it. First of all, it truly is my experience that we are never asked to face anything we're not ready to face. Now, again, when we're identified with the screaming, whining little kid, everything is more than we can face. But in fact, it's not. We're ready to face it, or it wouldn't be in our lives. And so I don't know what this is. I don't know what it's about. It looks mighty darn dark around here to me. And yet I can trust that this is going somewhere, and it's all for my benefit.
Right. Right. You said something about that, all for my benefit. I listened to that interview you did with Kelly Richards.
Oh, uh-huh.
You said something about that, you know, having the moments of insight and clarity and everything, and then all of a sudden that's gone. But
mm-hmm.
all the things that are happening along the way, what I took from that was everything that's happening along the way, and then we get back to that, it's like it is all for us.
Yes.
On our path.
Yes. Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it has, you know, it has that religious feel about it. You know, all of the kinds of things that we hear that make it sound like it's very personal. that, you know, somebody's kind of watching out for you and putting all the right things in the right place so that you, and certainly that's my experience. I just don't think anybody's doing it.
Right.
You know, that life is unfolding so perfectly for each of us because we are life. Life is us. And so as life unfolds, it unfolds beautifully and perfectly for each one of us. That's why I love so much that image of we're all cells in the body of the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all working together.
Life living us.
Living us. Yeah.
And
the times that we're struggling are the times that we're identified with ego. And when we drop that, the same things that were a struggle just a little while ago suddenly are very easy and manageable and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it sounds, a lifetime of spiritual practice, we see that happen over and over and over and over, which is what builds the trust and faith that's what's going on now, right? It seems it's really hard now, which means I'm moving through a great big old piece of karma, and it's going to fall apart any day now, and I'm going to see it for what it is, and I'm going to be free of it. And I trust that process. Because what's really happening is that I'm being transformed in the process. I'm becoming somebody who lives in faith and trust, open-heartedness, loving-kindness, generosity, gratitude, unconditional love. That's what this particular cell is being transformed into through all of these processes. And I'm happy for that. Even if sometimes it feels a little like that poor snake must feel when it's shedding its skin.
It's wonderful to get just a minute on the other side of it and be able to see it. I was telling somebody a story on the phone the other day about how is it that I get into feeling like this, and I noticed that I was telling the person who, you know, I'm not going to say is responsible, but it's like, oh, all of a sudden I just stopped talking and I said, oh, now I remember how it was that I first started feeling like this. And it was just hilarious. And I thought, oh, okay, so I can just drop the whole thing now forever. You know, I don't need to get into that particular fear anymore.
Uh-huh.
So it was just really, and I thought about that upside down. I just stopped and I thought, okay, I'm going to turn this upside down. It seems a little more rebellious than just dropping something. So it worked for me, but it's really good. So,
And it sounds like it is an experience that we share probably with a lot of people, but I'm willing to walk through an awful lot of darkness for those moments of light.
Because
those moments of light so far outshine any amount of darkness. So.
Oh, that's for sure. And it's for all of us, so it's so great.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well,
much
thank
for
you,
your
Connie.
Heart, and I will see you hopefully in August.
Yes, and maybe talk to you. We'll talk before. Who knows?
Oh, okay. All right. Sounds
all
great.
Right.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks. Good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Connie. You're listening to Open Air, and many more callers here still sharing. So let's talk to them.
Yeah.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jennifer from Washington.
Oh, hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I thought of about 30 things to talk about, and then right before I got unmuted, I heard conditioning say, no, we can't think of anything. We have to hang up.
So conditioning couldn't think of anything, but you had about 30 things. So I say that's just about right. That's exactly the way it works.
Oh, that's a good ratio, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I decided to call in today because I thought conditioning really needed a boot in the pants because it's been telling me all kinds of lies about how I'm not doing much practice. And when I thought about it, well, when I thought about it instead of conditioning, it just wasn't true. Conditioning is such a liar.
Such a liar. Yes. Yeah. And you know, the thing, of course, that I love about that is it's beating you up. It's nagging you about not practicing enough, like it wants you to practice more. Right? So you know, you're right. So I think for the next week, I'm going to do a sesshin. I'm just going to meditate for half an hour, and then I'll do a little, you know, whatever else to break the posture up, and maybe do a chore or something like that, and then I'll sit again. I'm going to do that for about the next week, and just watch it go nuts.
That's what I was aiming for by calling in, just to give it a little twist.
Yeah. Sure, you want me to practice. And
sure.
Again, you know, the other thing I like about it in pursuit of understanding the world of opposites, it only says that to you because it's not true.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So it says you're not practicing. It only says it when you are. It's designed just to throw you off the scent, and very often it's successful. It used to be with you, but not anymore.
Oh, that's really good, because, and especially when it gets really detailed, it was telling me I hadn't done anything on my 120-day assignment that came out of the FIT class, but
mm-hmm.
it was going into great detail about the parts I did wrong, and that I didn't do enough. And the thing that caught my attention was, like, wow, that's a really detailed description of how I'm not doing it. There's a lot of detail there.
Yeah. Again, so. As if it cared.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll just have to remember that.
Yes, yeah. And fascinating, isn't it, how closely it watches and the level of scorekeeping that it does. But if we keep in mind that that's all it has to do, because it doesn't have a life. Yours is the only life it has any chance of having. So it's going to obsessively watch it and critique it and just find the smallest thing that it can find, anything that's wrong, right? Because that's what it's going for. Anything,
exactly.
Any and everything that's wrong. And sometimes it has to dig pretty deep to find enough things to harangue you about.
Yeah, I think it was getting out its magnifying glass.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it really
and
was
it,
not finding enough.
Which is good, isn't it? Because at that point, it's funny. It's like,
I know.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I didn't do that. Wow. Why don't I just shoot myself now?
Exactly. It's like that too. It's like,
mm-hmm.
oh, then the penalty is death.
Yeah, everything with it is a capital offense. No matter what you've done or failed to do, everything is proof positive that you are a despicable person who deserves to die.
Yeah. So it's kind of screwing up because it's becoming more obvious to me.
Well, it's screwing up because you're paying more attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's always been this bogus. But if we're not paying close attention, you know, if we're just kind of getting an overall picture of it, we could say, oh, yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, I don't do as well as I could. And it gets away with it. But when we really, when we start paying the kind of attention that it's paying, then it becomes like a chess match. And it's not that good a chess player.
Yes, it really did have a reaction to your recent newsletter about how much time, what if we spent this much time recording and listening and only 10 minutes being with conditioning. And, oh, boy, was there an uproar in here.
Yeah, which, again, it's wonderful, isn't it, because it really reveals itself.
Yeah.
So what you're arguing for is for me to spend more time with you mistreating me. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I would want to do that because?
Because?
Yeah. That's good. I love it when it's really transparent and we're paying close enough attention that we can see just how transparent it is.
Yes.
Well, it's empowering.
It is. I have a new tool for keeping track. I've made a big calendar, and I write down every day what I'm doing. And I made some little stickers that are of the little Buddhas that are on the corners of your books. I always love that little Buddha. And so I had some of those made, and now I've got all these little practice stickers on with little Buddhas on my calendar. And I sent you a few because they're really cute. So.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All right. I've thought about that myself. June, you know, who does most of our illustrations
yeah.
and that sort of thing, did this thing after the last email class. I can't remember if I talked about it with anybody, but somebody referred to a check-in, and when they, you know, a check-in. So you're going to check in and on how you did with
yeah.
your whatever. And she saw it as a chicken, and drew this little chicken. You know, for your chicken, so I said, oh, you've got to make that, draw that out for me so I can make stickers, because
yeah.
how perfect to have little chickens that remind you, you know, to record and listen or whatever, you put it on your, wherever it is, so yeah, I look for stickers all the time, and the stickers that are out there for other people are not that great for practice stickers, so I think coming up with our own would be a
That's
very, very good thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
All
right.
Well, thank you so much. Great to hear
All right.
from you. All right.
Bye.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. And I think we have time for another caller, Sherry.
Good. Let's see if we can get one of our last minute callers tonight. We haven't had one in a while. Who we got?
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, this is Mark from the Chicago area. This is my first time I've gotten through on a call, so it's really nice to talk with you.
Well, welcome, Mark. It's great to have you with us. What's going on?
Well, I got my three dogs here all lined up. They're pretty excited, too, although maybe they just want to eat. I can't tell, so we're all excited.
So they're all lined up looking at you very intently as if they're just hanging
yeah,
on this next bit of either dinner or enlightenment.
Yeah, actually, one of the things, what I want to talk about is kind of related to the dog. I had an experience recently where I was walking my, well, I was actually carrying my little dog, a little poodle, toy poodle, and kind of an aggressive dog going the other way. It was on a leash, jumped up and tried to grab the dog from me, and I turned and tried to protect him, but he got his hip and took a bite out of him. You know, had to
Aww.
Have some surgery and all that. And, you know, the good news is he's going to be okay, but I'm working on the, you know, the conditioning's use of fear about this whole thing with me now, because I've never really experienced anything like this, and I've never been afraid to go walking out on the bike path or walking down the street and found myself thinking about, is this dog gonna attack me? You know, it's kind of a new thing, and so I guess I'm calling for some insight into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I can really relate, because I used to have a little dog too who got attacked any number of times by dogs that their owners swore were just the friendliest, happiest dogs in the world. And so, yes, the finding that balance of I need to be really present, I need to be heads up, I need to be watching for every signal and not allowing conditioning to take it into fear. So it's kind of a good description of how we want to go through all of life, right?
Yes, in fact, I've read the fear book probably 5 times at least. I it's been something I've always had a bit of an issue with, and so a lot of the things in there I can really bring to the context of this. You know, fear doesn't teach you anything. You don't teach a child to not run out in the street by making them afraid. You just teach them about the street and about cars, and this is kind of the same thing. I'm not any safer by being afraid of the next dog that's walking down the bike path. And
exactly.
In the conversation Yeah, now yet the conversation that I have in my mind is quite, you know, with self-hate and karmic conditioning,
well,
is really,
yes,
tough to turn off.
Yes, it is. And egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, is always looking for an opening, right? So now it's
right.
got some content that has some traction, and you might believe it, and you might hook into it. And so, do you record and listen, Mark?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So if I were doing it, I would make a recording that I listen to when I'm walking the dogs, and it would be about all of those kinds of awarenesses. That being afraid doesn't make us safe. Being in a conversation of fear just indulges the ego, ruins our lives, adds nothing to it. And what I want to do instead of indulging that conversation is be here, be really present, be with the breath, be alert, be paying attention, and taking responsibility. Being responsible doesn't mean we have control. Anything can happen. We know that. I can't prevent things in life from happening, but I can do my best to be as present and available as I can, you know, those kinds of things, so that you're listening to the information you want to be living from rather than allowing attention to go to those conditioned stories, because we know that those conditioned stories are for a completely different purpose than helping you and the pup be safe.
Right.
In fact, they can contribute to the difficulty, because often we can be lost in a fantasy that conditioned mind is spinning about this horrible thing that's going to happen, and we're not paying attention, and something does happen that had we been present, we could have avoided.
That could not be a more accurate statement. I have had that happen before, and I know exactly what you're saying there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the other dimension of this that is kind of another part of something I've worked on and seen in myself before is the man who owned the dog was very, I'll be polite and say he was belligerent, right? He just could not care less that this happened, and you know, I can see why his dog is out of control. He's pretty out of control. But anyway, I find myself working on the thought process of why are people like this? Why doesn't this guy see, you know, why isn't this guy seeing the world the right way like I see it? And that is like the second most big waste of time in the world, right after being afraid of something that's never going to happen anyway. And so I, you know, I guess it's because it's intensified because it happened in this setting. It would be like watching someone who does one of these mass shootings or does something really bad who seems to have no remorse and I'm struggling to let go of the fact that, well, that's just how this guy is, and there's nothing I can do or anybody can do to change it.
Right, yes, which is probably true. It's probably true. And we can know from ourselves, I don't know about you, but I can certainly look back over my life, and I can see those cringe moments where I was a lot more like him than like you, and you know, just lost in a world of conditioning and self-hate that I wasn't even aware of, and completely unconscious, and you know, I would say or do things that you know, if I'd been there, I would have never said or done. And waking up out of that unconsciousness is a really painful process to go through, which, as far as I can tell, we all have to go through sooner or later. So my wish for, you know, when I can get to that place after I get through wanting to, you know, attack him like his dog attacked my dog, and I kind of get calmed down, I can wish for him that as he wakes up, as compassionately and gently as possible. Because if we did just go from complete self-centered unconsciousness into awareness of how we are and what we're doing, I think it would crush us.
Yes.
Yeah. So just to hope.
I certainly can.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I certainly can think of things when I was young, you know, teenager in college, that ring true with what you just said, that I did things that now I look back and think, wow, what was happening in my brain? But,
yeah. And so as this guy wakes up, you know, you just hope that it's a gentle enough process that he's not completely devastated, and that what happens instead is that his heart opens and you know, he looks back on these and cringes, and they inspire him to want to do and be better in the future, which I think is the best we can hope for ourselves and for everybody else.
That's an interesting insight. Thanks very much.
Well, you are so welcome. Hey, now that we've done this once, we can do it again, huh?
That sounds good. Yeah, Carly thinks you do. He feels better now.
Oh, good. Very, very, very good. All right. Take care of yourself, huh?
Okay, good night.
Good night, Mark.
Thanks for joining us, Mark. You've been listening to Open Air, and I am seriously lit up, Sherry.
This is
an awesome show.
I tell you, those gals just started us out grinning, and by golly, I've been kind of grinning through the whole thing.
I have, too.
This is
really
a good practice we've got going here.
It's
a good practice, yeah. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
All
talk
right,
to you next
good night.
Week.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.